Now we're going to start our summary wrap-up session. Before I do that, I have a statement and an announcement. First of all, this is the announcement. Volume 1 of the Scholar and the Feminist Conference Series, The Future of Difference, edited by Hester Eisenstein and Alice Jardine, is in production and will be published in September of 1980 by G.K. Hall and Company of Boston. People who attend today's conference will receive publicity flyers this spring, June probably. There will also be another volume in that G.K. Hall series based on papers given at this conference. I know many of you had wanted to discuss further what happened at last year's conference. This will give you a chance to go over that material again and continue that dialogue, and hopefully next year we can continue with this one. Before I open this session, I think that I'd like to thank very much the committee that worked on this conference, and particularly the conference coordinators, Jane Gould, Jamie Pittman, and Christina Green, for their splendid work. And we should add to that the name of Maddie Stevens, Amy Pearl. They are the people who found all those garages that we didn't have to use today and sent out that postcard. I'd like to call to your attention Jane's particular devotion to the Women's Center at Barnard, her quest for excellence, her support of the students, the feminist community at Barnard, and the academic coordinator of the conference. If you ever want to do a conference, get Jane Gould to stand behind you and support you and contribute with her knowledge and her energy. It'll be a great experience. I now want to introduce the very brave people who are going to, or at least the first one of the very brave people who are going to wrap up this session. It's a real pleasure to introduce Kate Simpson. Kate, who is a professor at Barnard, was the original inspiration for the Feminist and Scholar Conferences. She, together with Jane Gould and Florence Howe, ran and conceived the first conference. So it's very appropriate that she should be finishing this conference in her last year at Barnard. Kate is going on to be a professor of literature at Douglas College of Rutgers University. She's also, as you know, the editor of that excellent women's studies publication, Signs, and she tells us she's very well equipped to do this job because when she was a kid, she's good at summarizing, because when she was a kid, she was an avid reader of the Reader's Digest. So here's Kate. Before oversimplification, a couple of announcements. Lisa Duggan, there is a message for you in the Women's Center. And Carol, I am going to spell the name lest I insult you with my mispronunciation. Carol, G-J-E-L-S-V-I-K. Will you please call home as soon as possible? As a long time, though vanishing resident of Barnard, I know very well the acoustical difficulties of this place, but our purpose today is perhaps as difficult as speaking in the Barnard Gymnasium. Our job in the next few minutes is hardly enviable, and I think Diane and I are probably standing up here as living embodiments of female masochism. So what we're going to try to do is to summarize some of the insights of today, particularly of the workshop, since all of you could only go to one. Our task is hard, because what we've taken on today is to consciously discuss difference, profound differences. And the trouble is, the more we see, the more they are. That we start with only differences of race and class and sexuality, then we look at in religion, temperament, and history. But again, to study difference is to study cloning and division. We consciously, too, have had several styles today, several modes of discourse.
The presentations have ranged from fantasy to footnotes, so that we've not only had to comprehend historical differences, but those of academic style as well. And finally, we are dealing, and we must not shrink from what we've done, with the most difficult of materials, both political and psychological. I understand that the workshop on AIDS talked about the tensions between mothers and daughters, but we are dealing with material that has been tabooed, not only for structural reasons, but because it's just too hard. So I think we ought to congratulate ourselves. For the most part, we have had honesty and humor, and I think we've avoided something else. We have avoided making, for the most part, hierarchy of difference. We have recognized difference without ranking them in order of deprivation. We have not said this group is more deprived, this group suffers more, for the most part. We have done that most complex of postmodern tasks, to recognize difference and not to rank in a bad fashion. For the next few minutes, our procedure will, I hope, be simple. First, Diane will summarize the workshop she saw. She had eight and I had eight. And that summary will take 10 to 12 minutes. I warned you, you thought we were kidding. Then I will summarize the eight that I saw, another 10 to 12 minutes. You may ask how we did this without miraculous powers of transportation. Well, those of you who thought Diane or I were walking out of your workshop, we weren't being ruined, we were just going on to the next. We tried to visit our workshops, but more important than that, each workshop, as you know, had a recorder, and each recorder came running over here and gave brilliant, succinct summaries of what had happened that we then had summarized. Then Diane will facilitate having an open mic session, and this will last till about 4:45. At 4:45, I will resume. We will say farewell. Those who wish to go upstairs to the party can go upstairs to the party. Those who wish to continue the discussion can continue the discussion upstairs or here. But our agenda, 10 minutes, 10 minutes, the rest of the time till 4:45, and then a momentary break. Diane Hereford.
I must be crazy to try to do this. You can't hear me. My name is Diane Hereford. I'm a sociology graduate student at the State University of New York at Stony Brook. This is a... this summary does not sound like a workshop. Just bear with me. Because it's... I'm going to go in some type of order. The first one I'm going to summarize is difference, domination, and community in the women's movement. This is Nancy Hartsock's workshop. She seemed to say three things, at least three things. In the beginning, we had ignored our differences. The next stage of the movement, we became separate. Now we're at the stage where we should try to find out how we can incorporate our differences, how we can go from being separate to a group of women together. One of the things that this workshop was about was strategies based on our history. When we get to the point where we're going to have a revolutionary women's movement, one that goes from our encapsulated women's movement to a movement that attacks and tries to transform the whole society, we should try to figure out how we can make our leaders accountable. I think that's one of the primary things that came out of this workshop. As we go from having a leaderless movement to a movement that has leaders that we want to make accountable to us. Is this sensible to you? Those of you that were there, in the open mic, if this is not correct, you can correct me. The next workshop was thrilling and marvelous, because this was a media workshop. Blondell Cummings was discussing through dance and audiovisual mechanisms how it feels to have your period. How it feels to wake up and say, I feel strange, I feel bloated, I feel that the world is falling apart, why am I crying? And to how having a period affects your whole daily life for a week. One of the things that was useful about this is that this put in a very elemental way what some of our commonalities are. Most of us will have our periods. And this is, if we can't talk about race, or we can't talk about class, or we can't talk about anything else, we can talk about our periods. Moving right along, the next one was class and race issues and women's studies. One of our old and dear friends, Florence Howe, who has made a great contribution to the women's movement, and Angela George, a person who teaches at Westbury, discussed what goes into having a women's studies program. When women's studies first began, there's an attitude against having women's studies. Why must you put women outside the framework of every other study? You know, why do we need a women's studies department? After we got past that, there was an ignorance on the behalf of the people who were teaching it, what kind of things should we teach? And finally, there was no information to teach. So we have moved quickly through all those problems. We've figured those out. Now we're trying to figure out who should be doing the teaching and who should be in the classes. Should black women be teaching black women, or should they be teaching white women? What should be going on? How are we going to make this a women's studies program that really is a women's studies program? Angela George, to answer that question, said, well, as a Hispanic woman, she felt that there should be a realization that for Hispanic women is not feminism opposed to racism, opposed to the language problem. All these things are important for Hispanic women. And these should be taught in totality, not taken, pulled apart, making a hierarchy of oppression for Spanish women. There should be in-depth subgroup analysis. I suppose she would argue that it makes no difference who teaches the course, just so that the person has the proper perceptual framework. The next one I went to, catch you later. The next one I went to was sexual empowerment, defining the erotic from our own personal experience. And that's very difficult for me to talk about, because I think we came away feeling that we had difficulty talking about our commonality as women because we hadn't really gotten in touch with our own bodies in a way that made us feel like women. A lot of our sexuality had been a relational sexuality, it had been a sexuality that had been socialized on us, and it's very difficult to talk about our sense of commonality when we don't have a sense of what our bodies are like. So one of the things that happened in this workshop, we attempted to get in touch with our genitals. Not masturbatory in touch, but just sitting in the room and getting in touch with our genitals in a way that possibly we don't do it as we sit around and walk around every day. That seems strange, but it's not at all strange. It was a very basic and elemental thing to do, similar to the types of things that went on in the dance workshop. I only have two more to go. Women and the church, two studies. This was fascinating. I wish I had half an hour to tell you about this. Evelyn Brooks Barnett talked about black and white women in the Baptist church between 1870 and 1900. It seems that
These women were concerned about their role in the church, people unable to preach, unable to do the sacraments of the church. So these women united, and they were able to launch a crusade to change the church. A different slant on this issue was women activists in radical sex in the 17th century. This was the other person in the workshop. This was Phyllis Mack. She said that these women in the radical sex did not engage in political action in the church. They engaged in spiritual action, which meant that they assumed their femininity gave them a pipeline to God. Because they were intuitive, because they were women, because they were debased creatures, somehow they talked to God in a way that men didn't talk to God. So in this workshop, we had two contrasting approaches to how women dealt with religion. One group dealt with it politically, another group dealt with it spiritually. Let me see if I missed one. Oh, I'm sorry. I did tell you about the feminist movement against prostitution, pornography, and male vice. Let me say that this was one of the most provocative and controversial workshops. Judith Walcox made the point that once women start marching against pornography, it becomes something that gets into the hands of the state, and at that point you don't know whether or not you're going to be what's going to happen. It becomes a moral crusade that the state in turn uses against women, and that the sense of moral outrage is not social organization, and it's a very dangerous type of crusade to engage in. That this has happened before, when women have started having these moral crusades, and may possibly happen again in the current Women Against Pornography movement. The politics of rage is not a good political tool. This does not unify us. This gives, according to her, the state a chance to use something against us. On the surface, it seems like an extraordinary unifying approach, but it need not be. And that if we're going to talk about pornography, it has to be talked about in terms other than male rape, male lust. It has to be talked about in terms of the larger social problems. All right, the last one was feminism and the new right. Jan Rosenberg said that she felt that the women's movement had been remiss. We had, in our rush to deny the reality of the nuclear family and its importance, we had left the woman who is a working woman, maybe the minority woman, whose family is very important to her. We left them in the cold. And instead of the old stereotype, we now have the new stereotype, the woman who goes out and gets a professional job, beats her chest about how she is a liberated woman, and we have left certain women behind. So what's happened, the new right has come in and taken these women. And what is taking them, not literally, but taking their emotions and their ideas. And that's dangerous to the women's movement. Rhonda Copeland said, oh no, that's not what's happened. What really has happened is the women's movement has been so successful that women are no longer being slaves, they're going out into the workforce, that the new right is responding to us in a way that they are, in the way that the manner that they are, because they are anxious. That this proves that the women's movement has been successful. And that in the past we have possibly been anti-family to some, but that's not the thrust of the women's movement. The participants in the workshop said, we don't care what the new right is doing. We are still going to get our abortions if we need them. We're still going to go to work, and we'll be damned if we're going back into the house. Well, you're about to see difference in action. My 10 minutes are going to adopt a different summary strategy than Diane's. What I'm going to try to do is give a sense of the common themes and the common ideas that seem to have run through very different workshops. One common theme seemed to be a sense of the presence of absence, a sense of regret at what we could not do or had not done. The workshop, for example, in the Black and Hispanic family was terrific, if only we had had more materials such as that presented there. And one thing too, another thing that seemed to be missing, that we have to be far more conscious of international women, of third world countries. This was addressed in the Modernization and Accumulation workshop, but I think it would be a pity if in our attempt to discover national differences, we forgot profound international differences and the political revolution that is embodied in such concepts as the new economic order. Other ideas that seemed to be shared were those of bad presences. There was a good deal of suspicion of certain received texts, and a reminder, one of the truths of the new scholarship about women in women's studies is even if it's in print, don't trust it. In fact, if it is in print, you probably shouldn't trust it. So in the workshop about sexual politics and the Afro-American feminism, Michelle Wallace's much publicized book received stringent criticism on a number of grounds. And in the workshop on modernization or accumulation, Esther Bosra was also criticized, though less severely. There was a sense of a need too, as we were skeptical, to extend even further and even deeper the analytic categories we have been using of race and class and sex, that we must not only add consciousness, but deepen our consciousness of those categories that we have brought together today. And so Renata Breidenthal, in her workshop, talking about class, reminded us again of the differences between the upper class and the working class woman. She was talking about male dependency, and she said, the upper class woman is dependent for privilege, the working class woman for survival. And when this quote was brought together in our recorders group, the recorder of one of the workshops on black women said, and my workshop might have said, and the black woman is not dependent at all. This leads us to a search, of course, to use Bonnie Dill's phrase, for particularities, for the particularities of our life. But again and again, the reminder was that we must not permit the particular to become the excessively personal, that our lives are shaped by structural and large-scale social factors, and we must not repeat the old mistake of reducing historical causality to psychology and human action to a matter of mere personality. This is not to repeat the old mistake that Renata Breidenthal warned us against of seeing women as passive. We must continue, and this I think was another theme of the workshop, to see women as active agents, as creatures whose self-perceptions are not fantasies, but truths. But that assumption of character, that feminization of humanism, does not mean that we should reduce history, as I said, to a matter of personality and moral culpability to the self. There was too a strong sense that as we established the particularities of our experience, our identity, our group identity, whether we see it in terms of class or race or sex, must be very solid before any coalitions can be brought about. That we must have a stable sense of community before we can make coalitions with other communities. But that sense of community seems to be expressed in very different ways. There was a radical difference between the sense of community in the workshops having to do with the black experience and in those having to do with the lesbian experience. And I don't know if it's anomalous to today or a general truth that the description of the lesbian experience and the forms in which that description took were singular and had less in common than the analyses of race and class. There was a sense, too, that after identity within a small community had been stabilized, if it had once been devalued, it must be transvalued. So the housework of workshop, reminding us that housework could be perfectly good if you got paid enough for doing it. And if there was any analytic scheme that linked
these various perceptions, insights, and ideas. And by the way, one of the things that appeared again and again is how very different people think if they're Marxists. And the difference, that we did not address but has been addressed in the past is the difference between feminist scholars who are consciously Marxists and those who have only unconsciously absorbed some of it. And I think that this is, there is no one, you cannot be a theoretician and not know Marxist thought. I mean, it's just impossible. But there is a very real difference between those who self-consciously use it and those who have it in a haphazard fashion. And the perceptions of reality are dissimilar, and this is something that we need to address. But if there were a common analytic scheme, it is probably a gift of Marxism, expressed in such essays as Joan Kelly's The Double Vision of Feminist Theory, which is the need always to look at experience in terms of production and reproduction in its larger sense. To take Roz Pichetsky's term, to look at labor and fertility, and never to forget that fertility is also a form of labor. There were fewer strategies of coalition than there were stabilizations of difference. But if there were any strategies for coalition, they were these. One was perhaps particularly appropriate for a conference in an academic setting, the title of which is The Scholar and the Feminist. It called again and again for a clarification of consciousness, and as happened in the housework workshop, I suppose it's no accident that I just then elided housework and housewife, but a clarification not only of consciousness of difference, but if we are to have contracts between different groups, that they must be very clear. An end to, in other words, all the workshops seem to be calling for an end to conceptual muddles and for the strategic errors that this engenders. It was, in a sense, a very real tribute to the power of the mind. And there was also a sense that in the experiences that many of us have endured, there can be models that others of us can use. For example, the Black and Hispanic Family Workshop suggested, and I think correctly, that in the Black extended families, there is a model of strength and of workability. This does not mean that we should appropriate the experience of others. It does mean that we should do what colleges and universities are meant to do, that our experiences should be profoundly educational. Thank you.
Going to turn a chance to speak. If you would just approach the microphones and we'll go in order.
Is there only one mic there?
There's one there. It on? Yes.
It's on.
No.
Is there a light turning on? Oh, I thought somebody's going to come to the rescue.
Is this one on?
Yes.
Okay. I'd like to read briefly a letter that came in the mail from a women's studies center in Rome. This is certainly connected with women's studies here. We're all part of one world of women, at least some of the time. Right? This says, our Center of Women's Studies has started a source and reference library for the advancement of women's studies in Italy. The little background, we are at the moment at a crucial point for our work, especially we're troubled now with finances. This is not an appeal for money, don't get nervous. This is why we've begun to ask directly all the women making researches to help us by sending their publications and telling other women we can contact for the same purpose. This is why we're writing to you, and this is why I'm reading this to you. We need the cooperative contribution of all the women who have been written about or who have done research on women. We would be very grateful if you could send us a free copy of the articles and or books you have written. And what I'm asking you to do, I won't read the address because I think it'll get mangled by my lack of Italian language, but I would like to get this reprinted in the history bulletins, in the MLF bulletins, or in any others that can be suggested so that you can have the address available and send whatever you have that you would like to contribute in the way of written material. Want it now? It's called Centro Studi, S-T-U-D-I. Donna Woman Femme. That's all one name. Donna Woman Femme. 00185 Roma. Viale, V-I-A-L-E, little road, I guess. Angelico. Viale Angelico 301. I'll read those numbers a second time if you like. Well, it's my only copy, truthfully. 00185 Roma, Viale Angelico 301. But I'll try to get this published in a few places besides.
Well, we'll make a copy of it, and the Barnard Women's Center will have it, and if anybody wants to call Jane, they can call and find out the address.
Hello. I would like to have something clarified. In the lesbian conference, did I hear that the lesbian women had less community? Did I hear correctly?
Hmm? Is that a question to me?
It's a question to the person who talked about the lesbian conference, about the community, the lesbian community, if we had less in common. I'm not sure that I heard correctly. I'd like it clarified.
What I said was this. On the basis of reports from the workshop and my own experience of them, that the experience of the three things we were looking at, the three sources of difference, race and class and lesbianism or sexuality, something seemed very different today as it was expressed about the lesbian experience. That you could see commonalities between the descriptions of race and class, although they were different. But there was something about the lesbian experience as it was described today that fit fewer common categories than the other two.
I think that's your definition of it, first of all.
May I finish, please?
Yes.
I did not say there was a lesser sense of community. By no means. I was not making comparisons about the sense of community among women according to class lines, among lesbians, or among minority women. I was not saying that. I was saying what seemed to emerge and will need much further clarification was that there was something very different about the lesbian experience as it was manifested today in the various workshops.
I understand that there was only one workshop on the. There's only one workshop that said lesbian community. Others were run by lesbian women, but there was only one lesbian conference. Another thing is I would like to know why the word colonization was not allowed. Why the lesbian group were told not to use that word. The word was okay for the black women, it was okay for the Hispanic, it was not okay for the lesbian women. I'd like to know why.
Jane, would you like to answer that question? Where's Jane Boulle? Well, okay, I will. It is not that I don't want to take responsibility, but I think that Jane is the one who made that decision.
I don't think that I could probably give you a satisfactory answer, but it was the judgment of a number of us on the planning committee and was consulted with a number of people who cared very much about presenting the lesbian perspective in the most positive way, that this would not be the best title for this particular workshop. It was done, shall I say, in an attempt to be positive.
I would also like to say something, being one of the people on the planning committee. It wasn't that word was not allowed. What happened was that title was submitted. As a title, there was a discussion, as Jane pointed out, amongst planning committee people who had some difficulty understanding what it meant. It seemed ambiguous to some people, not to everybody. Some people thought it was wonderful. I would also like to add that this was not the only workshop in which that was done. There were other workshops in which the planning committee said, I don't understand what that means. I made long distance phone calls talking to workshop leaders saying, could you clarify, could you change? By no means was the Lesbian History Archive said, unless you change, you can't participate in the conference. And it was also said that this would be discussed at the conference in the workshop. I said, fine, I don't want to censor anybody. That's wonderful, this is our problem. We work collectively, as do you, and let's see if we can work it out.
Can I say something? As an early feminist, we learned that we define who we are. It is not for women who are not lesbians to define what the word colonization means, and if it was the word we chose to use, that was the word that should have been used. Again, we're having another case of not the patriarchy defining us, but we're having other women defining what lesbian women wish to use as a title, and I feel it very unfair.
Thank you for your comments. Next.
I originally wanted to make an announcement, which I'm going to do first, and then I'd like to say a little bit more about the sexual empowerment workshop. Part of my vision of this conference that I think Kate echoed was the phrase that Bonnie Thornton Dill used, was to collect our particularities. And one of the ways that those particularities get lost is in theory making. I'm working on a project separate from the one that I did the workshop on, which is lesbian historiography. How to define the issue of lesbianism in a new way so that when you're doing history, you don't get tangled up in all the defensive questions about was she or wasn't she. And one of the things I want very much to do is to have different cultural contexts represented. I'm trying to do a panel for the National Women's Studies Conference and also for the Berkshire Women's History Conference. And I'm very much looking for people who are not from the mainstream culture, who are lesbians, who would be interested in talking or writing a paper on what are the signs of lesbianism in their culture. How does, say, a Latina lesbian recognize another Latina lesbian? What were her growing up experiences? How do they differ? How are they like other lesbians? If there are women who would be interested in working on that project, I would very much like them to talk to me before this conference is over. I was trying to do, as a matter of fact, a similar thing in the sexual empowerment workshop. I wanted to say, does every woman feel that sexuality, her sexuality, is also dangerous? Where do we get that idea? How is it connected with our own context, our own cultural context, our race, our economic situation, how we grow up? And because of the fact that the genitals are the place that women often feel afraid, that we are taught to keep them protected. I did some experiential exercises dealing with how we feel when they're protected and unprotected. But the main point was to try to get at the multiplicity of experiences that influence our sexuality.
One idea I was looking for at this conference was the idea of the value of differences. And I have one brief example to illustrate this. I didn't want people to leave without wondering, what's the good of being so different, since in fact we all are so different. I had a dream once in which I was propositioned by a fellow named Eddie. I said I had a dream in which I was propositioned by a man named Eddie, and I was supposed to meet him in room 25. And I dutifully went looking for room 25. Fortunately, I could only find room 23, room 24, room 26. Room 25 was gratefully missing. And then I ran into a heterosexual friend of mine, myself being lesbian, and I asked her if she knew where room 25 was. And she said, oh, you don't have to worry about that. I've already been there and seen Eddie. And for me, that dream is an illustration of one of the great services that heterosexual women do. Most of us would agree that men need women very much, and that the fact that there are a lot of women who really care about them and want to deal with them in an erotic, intimate way is extraordinarily important, and it breeds, it makes possible my life and the life of many other lesbian women. Contrarily, or on the other side, lesbian women can contribute much, I think, to the quality of life for heterosexual women. In that we show that it is not necessary, in fact, to live through a man. That, it seems to me, in itself creates the existence of a model for an autonomous female self in a heterosexual relationship. We're also free to spend time building women's culture because of the great generosity of our heterosexual system.
Would you be brief, please?
I'm finished. Thank you.
Joanna Miller, and the last time I was here was in 1974 at the first conference. I was one of Florence Howe's original women's studies students out at Old Westbury, and I studied women and labor. Since then, I've been working for District 1199, the National Union of Hospital and Healthcare Employees. I enjoyed coming back here today. I felt that I came back here as a personal thing, but I just want to comment that I'm a little disappointed that there were so few women here that represented working women. If you're a black woman, if you're not a scholar and a feminist, you're not represented here. If you're a Hispanic woman, there's little representation here, but if you're not a scholar and you're not a feminist, you're not here. And I think that if the women's movement is going to continue to grow, that it has to reach out to working women, and I hope that you'll do that in the future. The Coalition of Labor Union Women is working very hard, and I hope that perhaps some sort of alliance can be made between working women and women in academia. Thank you.
Hello. First of all, I like to applaud, in a way, that this conference, I was here last year, that it's getting a little less rarefied in what it's saying. That I like to applaud. What I would like to critique is that I think women are perhaps, the women that are, for the most part, in this room, who are probably college-educated, in the professions, are perhaps getting a little too comfortable, that the doors are beginning to open for us. But for a lot of women, they're not being opened. There's a lot of women that are still inarticulate, that are still blind, that are still don't realize there are tools out there to be used. And I think it's very important that these women be reached. These are the working women. I would like to applaud having Carolyn Reed here, because in a way, 5 or 6 years ago, she would not be in a conference like this. because it's an academe, and I don't think that the problems of the working women were addressed, but they're beginning to be addressed, but they're not enough. Now, there are a whole group of women out there that the Anita Bryants and the Phyllis Shapleys are beginning to reach, because what they are saying is traditional and safe and they can relate to it. And I think what needs to be done is to reach those women.
Hello again. I'd just like to share something that I think that you overlooked when you talked about what Professor Hoyt has said.
I'm sure I overlooked a lot.
Yeah.
It was not purposeful. It was just, we had to do it in 15 minutes, okay?
I think that you kind of use the euphemism that many women use when they deal with Latinas, and that is being Spanish. We are not Spanish, we are not Hispanic, we are distinct. You should think that it's something that we, and I am including myself among other Hispanic women of different cultural groups and different orientations, are endorsing. Beware that the 1980s is not the decade of the Hispanic or Latinos or Chicanos or whatever you want to call us. It is the decade of people, women and men, and that I do not endorse at all any kind of, being put on the same parallel or catching up with making, in particular, black women think that their presence is any less important because finally Latino people are getting what is due them, since we have also contributed to the well-being and the structure, that is. Am I understood? Because I don't want any misunderstanding. You know what I'm saying? Beware of that, because there's going to be a lot of racism emanating, I think, from whites and blacks towards Hispanics if we don't realize what's being done, particularly because of the census. We're finally graduating out of college. Not that it means anything, because now a degree, because we have it, isn't anything anymore. Now you need a PhD for graduate school, doesn't mean anything either. So catching up is going to be a lifetime.
Thank you for the clarification. I'd like to make an announcement. I don't have a comment really to make. I'm from the Washington area, and I work at D.C. Red Christ. I'm from Washington, D.C., and I work with the D.C. Red Crisis Center. And what we're organizing is the Third World Women in Violence Conference. It's going to be sponsored in August 21st, 22nd, and 23rd. What I'm going to do is take and leave our flyers in the Women's Center, and I hope that you pick them up. And I also hope that we're in the process of trying to build a mailing list, and that if you have some names of people or organizations, and if you'd like some information, you can see me in the back, or Loretta Ross is here. She's a sister that has the beads all over her hair. It looks like a cap. And if you leave us that information, we really appreciate it. Thank you.
I had what I hope is constructive criticism about this morning's panel, which bothered me some, but then I saw it throughout the whole day, so I wanted to bring it up in front of everybody. The first two speakers, particularly, and to some extent the third, although she didn't do it quite as much, referred to women as they throughout the whole first two speeches. And I think the first step, the example that was given of the straight woman who claimed her lesbianism was fantastic. But before people are able to do that, we've got to be able to first affirm that we're women and stop calling women they in our everyday life and in academic studies. I feel like that's something very basic that everybody who calls herself a feminist knows by now, but throughout the day I've seen that isn't true, so I like people to just think about it.
What I'm interested in raising to the conference and to all of us women here, and I realize that there are a lot of divisions and a lot of things to be overcome and realized, and consciousness is still expanding and growing. But I was very frightened. Each time I go to something new, sterilization abuse, each time I go to something about the growing power, funding, visibility of the right women in America, in the Right to Life movement. It frightens me, and what I want to know is where is our strategy? How are we going to deal with these women? They are not being taken seriously, and they are a threat to each and every one of us. Because everything, even if we haven't gained everything that we've wanted as women, and we haven't, but what we have now could be so easily wiped away with this whole human life amendment. They call a constitutional convention. I'm frightened at what the outcome could be. And I hope people go away from this conference asking, how can we combat not only our own personal issues that we have, but the whole fact that we might be totally disavowed very quickly and very powerfully. And I hope everyone goes home feeling very seriously threatened in that way.
I was really hoping that this was one conference that I could come to and not have to come to the microphone. But after having gotten a backhanded sort of, I don't know what, it sort of disturbed me. And it said having people like Carolyn Reed, and she sort of talked about articulation. And I really would like to say that there are people like me who have our PhDs in common sense. And I think that we really, think as feminists that we really have to think about how we speak to each other and about each other. And I think that people said it before me, that people can define themselves. And since a lot of the people that I work with are not here, I would like to say that they are very articulate, and they can articulate, and you could possibly learn something from them. And I say that with the sense that I think sometimes we get so full of ourselves and about our education and about where we are that we forget the basic things in life and sense. I was referred to, and I'm sure that the sister meant it in a positive way, but I want her to know that it did not come out to me as being very positive.
Thank you very much. My name is Catherine Franke. I work with Women's Collage Theater, which is a feminist theater group that gave a workshop here this afternoon. Apparently Diane neglected to mention what we did in our workshop, so I just thought I would briefly state what happened there. I think the most important thing that happened to our workshop, we gave women an opportunity to talk about their intimate feelings on issues of class, race, and sexual preference. And we asked them to, in question form, say their feelings about these issues. Just briefly, I think as far as class was concerned, the major point was that women were sort of confused about what class is, how it affected them, you know, what kind of class am I, is it because of the job that I have or what. About sexual preference, there was also a little bit of confusion. What do the labels really mean? What is my sexual preference? Why is this my sexual preference? Is this natural? Is this something I was conditioned to? As far as race was concerned, I think that women were very saddened, and there was a lot of guilt, but a real commitment to trying to work through these differences. I think it was a special space. I think it was probably very different from most of the workshops. It was an opportunity for women to be very intimate and vulnerable with each other, and I think everyone enjoyed it. I just wanted to talk about it.
Please excuse my omission.
My name is Christy Carmody Airy. I'm from Jersey City, New Jersey. I am very active with the Hudson County Chapter of National Organization for Women and the Parents Council of James F. Murray School in Jersey City. I made a conscious effort when I came here today to pick something out for me, a nurturing workshop, and that was number 10, Making Connections, a workshop in movement and improvisation. I did that, and I am very pleased that I did make that choice. What the young lady before me said is quite true. Quite often when you for me anyway, working in the women's movement, I sit, I lobby, I work, I demonstrate. But there are times when I want to sit down and humanize and make personal, emotional contact with women. And this workshop gave it to me. I would like to say that the questions of race, of sexual preference, and of class, we had to ask questions, stand up and three at a time, quite vulnerable, and ask questions. I haven't done that in about 10 years. I needed that. I learned from it. I want to make one other recommendation. They're going to have a play tonight, Sirens, tonight and tomorrow. If you want to nurture yourself, give yourself something for tonight and tomorrow. Invest in Sirens.
Please be brief because we have to go have a drink.
My name is Blondell Cummings. I'm a dance choreographer and artistic director of the Cycle Arts Foundation. I'm working on a project that deals with friendships, especially between women. I would like very much to collect any poems or any letters between people for my project. It will be a mixed media piece that should happen sometime in the summer. I will be in the back, so if you're interested, please be in contact with me. Thank you.
You have a wonderful position. You're the last person to speak. So everyone will remember what you say, so make it very good.
That's like asking me to follow Carolyn Reed. With something snappy, which I can't do. I know many of you really do want to go for that drink, like Diane, so I'll try and make it brief. I would just like to address, however, what was said by the woman who was wondering about the ideas that we were going to have for fighting against repression. And again, I would like to say that that's something I think that should concern us all, as she said. It's something that we're all facing. But I think that it's very important to remember we don't really have that many women as enemies. It's not as acquaintances. That's probably not clear, so you can ask me after I have a drink. But I would like to say, in trying to develop strategies, that it's really important to go to the past. Again, the recent past, 10 years ago, whatever, to look at the theories that have been written, to look at the ideas that have already been expressed. I guess anyone who was at the Simone de Beauvoir conference heard me say basically the same thing, that it's really something that we do, repeat the wheel all the time. We can't do that. There are all sorts of people like Charlotte Bunch who are alive and kicking, who are here, who can tell you everything they wrote or whatever, who can tell you all sorts of sources. We can go to ourselves, but it's important to know that past and to look for strategies there, because it's very important for us not to repeat that past, and it's facing us again. That's all.
I think it's a marvelous comment to end on, but I wish to correct myself. The reception is not upstairs, as I said. It is in the lower level of McIntosh where we had lunch. And before we go to where we had lunch, may I end us with the last line of an Adrienne Rich poet that matters for us, I think, whether we're scholars or activists, and I don't see a contradiction in terms, no matter what our race or class or sexuality. And it's simply when she wrote, "We are working for the relief of the body and the reconstruction of the mind." Thank you.